From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire has the third highest energy costs in the lower 48 states, and so the governor's new 10-year energy plan focuses squarely on that problem. It emphasizes what it calls market-based solutions, practical results, and fewer burdensome regulations. It also mentions clean technology and renewable energy, but the overall tone is clearly in favor of nuclear and gas for our foreseeable energy future. Today in The Exchange, we plug into this new energy plan and see what happens next. And let's hear from you, Exchange listeners. What should our energy priorities be, and how can we best meet them? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange. Or give us a call, of course, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. With me in studio, four guests helping us wade through this new energy plan. Jeb Bradley is here, Senate Majority Leader and Vice Chair of the Energy Committee. Senator Bradley, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura. How are you?
Also with us, Don Kreese, consumer advocate who works on behalf of New Hampshire residential ratepayers. And Don, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Annie Ropeek, reporter covering energy development and the environment for NHPR, including, of course, this new energy plan. Annie, thank you so much.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Sam Evans-Brown, host of Outside In and formerly our environment reporter for NHPR. Sam has covered energy issues intensively for us here at the station. And Sam, thank you for helping us out as well. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, Sam, how much of a shift is this 10-year plan in terms of where New Hampshire has been headed?
So these energy strategies are typically, you know, they're kind of a product of the political moment. They're largely produced by bureaucracies that are staffed by the governor. So who's sitting in the corner office really informs what the documents are going to say. And frequently they're about political signaling. They're trying to direct the legislature towards the governor's priorities, and also to a certain extent the staff of the Public Utilities Commission, which also makes a lot of energy policy in the state. And so if you look at what's happened between when the original document was created versus this three-year update, you know, we have someone else in the corner office, of course, which I think is probably the biggest factor that has changed the content of it. But also, you know, we've had the decision on the Northern Pass project. We've had the coming and going of several major natural gas pipeline projects that were announced and then shelved. We've had Massachusetts passing a law that made it so that they were going to subsidize Canadian hydropower and also offshore wind power. And of course, we've had, you know, continued power plant closures all around New England, including notably Vermont Yankee, which resulted in rising greenhouse gas emissions in the electric sector in New England.
So, and I'm glad you mentioned New England, Sam, because just for clarification for our listeners, it's important to recognize that, you know, New Hampshire isn't its own little energy island.
No, indeed. The grid is, it's even hard to say that that New England is its own energy island. New England is regulated as a unit, but we're deeply interconnected to the entire eastern seaboard. But that said, you know, New England as a unit is typically how we talk about energy generation. And you know, we could delve into that for a while if you wanted.
Well, we've done whole programs on ISO New England, the independent system operator, what it does. Annie, to you. So Sam mentioned that these plans are important because they set a tone for the legislature, for the Public Utilities Commission, for other entities involved in energy decisions. But how much do they affect what happens then on the ground, Annie, in terms of, you know, the decisions I make as an average consumer, in terms of the investments that businesses make, in terms of the investments or priorities that the cities or towns make? How much does this big state energy plan boil down to the ground?
Well, I think, as you said, it kind of depends on what the legislature does with it and also other regulators. So this may be a better question for Senator Bradley.
A lot of actors in this drama here.
So like Sam said also, I mean, it is a lot of political signaling. So this plan in a lot of ways signals to businesses, to energy developers, kind of the direction the state may take on their sort of areas in the coming years. Again, it all depends on how the legislature sort of enacts the plan and how it actually boils into policy. But I think that, you know, you could see this affecting people's ability to get subsidies for their renewable energy and for energy developments, again, if it translates into policies that do that. It might signal to big energy developers that New Hampshire might be a friendly place in some ways or not so friendly of a place in other ways, depending on what kind of energy developer you are, right? And it also signals to specific actors like Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant, which gets a nice shout out in this plan as being crucial to our energy stability, that we should try to keep it online as long as possible. And so if you're the power plant's owner NextEra, that's a good sign for you.
So if I'm a big solar company, I look at this 10-year energy plan and I say, you know, New Hampshire doesn't seem as interested as perhaps other states, so I might go elsewhere.
Sure. If you're deciding between New Hampshire and Massachusetts and you're looking for a big subsidy, this might say to you that you're not going to find that here.
Senator Bradley, how much do these plans matter, these 10-year plans?
You know, I think they're very important in terms of setting priorities. And so I salute the governor for having a comprehensive plan. I think one that focuses on the price of energy, which we know is, you know, a sore thumb in New Hampshire, as well as reliability, fuel diversity, siting criteria, the importance of renewables. But the governor appropriately focuses on price, and I think that's really important.
Do these make a difference in terms of what the legislature decides to do?
You know, I think that legislators look at a plan, but I think they also consider individual pieces of legislation. And so I think, you know, where it becomes important is the priorities of a governor. Also, I think we try to attempt to reflect them in legislation. And so I think that, you know, energy is generally a, you know, bipartisan issue or a nonpartisan issue. So a plan like this one, I think all of us, all 424 of us are concerned with price. We're concerned with reliability. We're concerned with fuel diversity. And I think we're also well aware, as others have noted already this morning, that New Hampshire is part of a six-state region, and that region is threatened with reliability issues in the future. And so maintaining existing sources of generation, I think, is vitally important in New England. And I think, you know, the governor in this plan pays, you know, the appropriate attention to that.
Well, I've got lots of emails coming in already. Energy is always a hot topic among our listeners, so we'll get to those in just a moment. You can send your comments in, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Don, to you, you know, we've heard for a very long time how high New Hampshire's energy rates are. This plan, as everybody has said, is very focused on this. It could not be clearer. The top priority is to lower rates. Why are New Hampshire's energy rates so stubbornly high, Don?
I'm not sure I completely accept the premise that our electric rates are outrageously high. In terms of residential electric bills, average monthly residential electric bills in New Hampshire are they rank number 25 in the country, at least they did in 2016, according to the Energy Information Administration.
So in the middle of the pack for residential rates, yeah.
We have certain inherent disadvantages geographically because we're far away from a lot of fossil fuel sources and we're in a relatively cold corner of the country. So we're never going to be able to provide, I don't think, the cheapest energy of any of the lower 48. But at the same time, I think the energy plan's focus on ratepayers and the effects on their electric bills is really important and a useful contribution to the debate. And to me, the most encouraging thing about the energy plan is the fact that it acknowledges something I've been proclaiming to the rooftops forever, which is energy efficiency is the cheapest way to meet the next kilowatt hour of demand. So we can talk about Seabrook, we can talk about renewables, we can talk about natural gas, but the best thing to invest our next penny or dollar in is energy efficiency.
So a lot of people say you can, you know, not build a couple power plants if you just improve your efficiency.
Indeed, there's vast untapped potential for that right here in New Hampshire.
Which always amazes me because we've talked about this forever. and yet, efficiency and how important it is.
Our ratepayer-funded energy efficiency programs lag behind the ones that our other New England states have. So we're still catching up.
Okay, Sam, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead.
I just wanted to draw attention to a distinction that Don just made between rates and bills. Don correctly pointed out that New Hampshire's average electric bill is in the middle of the pack. Our average electric rate, which is the dollar per kilowatt hour, the price, as Senator Bradley puts it, are in fact quite high and some of the highest in the nation. But we use less electricity, and so our bills are in the middle of the pack. However, that rate is very hard to ignore if you're a large industrial power user, because if you're using a lot of energy, you're still paying that high price. And I think that's where a lot of the pressure to lower electric rates comes from, is from manufacturers, large power users who, it's sort of cold comfort to them to hear that the average residential rate is in the middle of the pack when they're paying a high rate.
Go ahead, Don.
But the same point as to commercial electric bills. We are right. In fact, we're actually outperforming most of the country. If you look at the regional average, again, this is data from the EIA, and I'm not going to sling around numbers for you.
It's the Energy Information Administration.
Right.
It's the federal agency.
We are actually doing better in terms of the bills we're sending to commercial customers than all of the other regions in the country. We're not the best state in the country for that. But we're holding our own. I really believe we are.
So if we're not doing too badly, Senator Bradley, why the hyper-focus of this plan on lowering those rates?
Well, I think that Don is correct about energy efficiency. And I think that because we've had high rates in New Hampshire for some time, that's encouraged energy efficiency. And I think the PUC, and I think a credit to Don as the consumer advocate, worked long and hard on an energy efficiency resource standard, which is part of the mix now, is widely accepted in the legislature, is helping a lot of businesses as well as residences become more energy efficient. Businesses, they look at a lot of different things. They look at the cost of health care, the cost of taxes, the cost of workers' compensation, the cost of labor, and the cost of energy. And our energy costs are higher. And so when people do that ranking in terms of where to locate businesses, that comes into play. That being said, again, I think, the governor's focus on price is the appropriate one. It's a reason why in the last budget we repealed the electric consumption tax. That's going to benefit residential ratepayers up to the largest users. It's not the largest tax that we have in New Hampshire, but it's certainly an indication of how seriously we take the price issue in terms of the cost of electricity in New Hampshire.
Let's go to the phones, all of you. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Bob's in Manchester. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Happy to be on with your fine guests. I was very, very disappointed in this so-called update of the energy strategy. Which we, goes back to 2014. This was supposed to be an update. It's kind of a down date because it reverses our commitment to continue our support for renewable energy, and I think most people support that. And I was certainly delighted that Don points out that the really important thing for most energy customers, not all as Jeb says, but for most, is not the rate but the bill they pay. Nobody pays rates. Everybody pays bills. And in bills, we're doing pretty well, and we can do better. Now,
so you're calling this a down date instead of an update because you don't like the emphasis on fossil fuels and nuclear, Bob.
It seems to back off our commitment to continuing support for renewable energy, and we still have a very ambitious energy goal, which I hope we will meet, of having 25% of our electric energy come from renewable sources by the year 2025.
Well, Bob, thanks for calling in. And I've got a bunch of emails, actually, that echo what Bob says. Here's Ted, who works in the solar industry. He says this revised energy strategy is incredibly disappointing. The public comments were overwhelmingly supportive of renewable energy and efficiency, not more natural gas, so we can, quote, lower our energy costs. How can this new administration ignore the majority? That's from Ted. Kate also says, after the unanimous SEC denial of Northern Pass, Eversource and the governor claimed the decision sent the clear message that New Hampshire, quote, is closed for business. Kate says, yet at least seven innovative and essentially unopposed alternatives exist. including the National Grid, Grant State Power Link. Why can't the proposed energy strategy have as its theme, New Hampshire is open for the 21st century business, rather than keep us in approaches rapidly being left behind by other states? Annie, I'd love your thoughts on this, too. It seems like folks in renewable energy feel like this is, as Bob put it, you know, not an update, but a down date.
Yeah, I think that they see it. There's a difference between an all-of-the-above energy strategy and sort of vocal and active support for renewable power. So I'm sure that folks in the governor's office would differ that this plan doesn't support renewables. It certainly doesn't say we don't like renewables. It doesn't necessarily go above and beyond to say that renewables should be our number one option. It says that may the best option win, right, that they should compete on a free market, sort of a level playing field, and the lowest cost option should be the one that you know, supplies our power. And I think the problem for renewable power sources is that they're still in a place where some of these subsidies and sort of state policies have been meant to kind of get them to a point where they can compete on a level playing field, because we recognize that they are necessary for meeting some of these climate goals and that, you know, people support them for ethical reasons, right? And so the question is whether they're actually there yet, where they're ready to sort of take the training wheels off. And I think that, you know, when you talk to this sort of regional energy leaders, I was at this big regional energy forum last week, and the message was definitely that New England is transitioning to a renewable powered grid slowly but surely, right? And so that the energy strategies over the next several years need to be about how do we get there stably and reliably. And natural gas and nuclear are definitely part of that, which is what this plan says. But I also think that this energy strategy does call out other states for their subsidies of renewables, saying that that's interfering in the free market and criticizing that. And that may be what some of these renewable folks are seeing as a backward step.
So it's interesting. So at that conference you went to, Annie, the message was New England is transitioning. Now with this new New Hampshire energy plan, you know, does that mean accept New Hampshire?
It was interesting. I mean, there, you know, the chair of Connecticut's Public Utilities Authority, who's also in charge of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is our carbon trading program, Katie Dykes is her name. She was on that panel and she said, you know, it's not productive for states to say that other states are doing the wrong thing by supporting renewables or by not supporting renewables, that, you know, all the state policies don't have to line up or don't have to match, but they have to mesh, right, in order to move us down the playing field. So all the states need to be communicating on what's possible, as opposed to trying to sort of spar with each other. I mean, there's healthy competition and then there's unhealthy competition, right?
Don, I'd love your thoughts on this, too. You know, a lot of people hearing, as the governor said, the state should not pick winners and losers when it comes to energy. A lot of people would say, of course, the state shouldn't pick winners and losers. You know, let the market decide. How does that hit your ears?
It is a valid point, but the answer is much more complicated than just, oh, we're not going to subsidize anybody. As both Annie and Sam have both pointed out, we're part of a region. The electricity grid is operated regionally. The head of the agency, ISO New England, who operates the grid, has been running around warning about rolling blackouts in 3 or 4 years. I think that's a reckless and alarmist view. And so what we need to do is make sure that we have a diverse and robust electricity grid that takes account of the fact that we have 6 New England states. Each has a slightly different public policy. It all has to be accommodated because we're all one big electricity grid. That is very, very difficult.
All right. Coming up, more on what you just said, Don. Super interesting. We need a diverse, robust energy supply. How diverse is this plan's goals? We'll also take a lot more of your calls. Thank you for that one, Bob. The number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, energy in New Hampshire, what an updated energy plan says about the state of energy affairs and the governor's priorities. Send us an email. Tell us what you think. TheExchange@nhpr.org is the address. Exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter @NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So along with the goal of reducing energy costs, this plan also tackles another goal that people talked about for a long time, as all of you know. And Sam, I'll turn to you first, and that's the issue of reliability. We've seen storms where, you know, a large percentage of power goes out for a long time. Also, diversity. We've been told that we've put too many eggs in the natural gas basket. We need to not do that. So these kind of go hand in glove. You know, diversity, reliability. How much does this plan help out with that?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because it's difficult to see how a 10-year energy plan coming out of one state in a 6-state region is going to deal with the diversity problem.
Getting to that important thing to remember, we're only part of a whole here.
Indeed. And there's a lot to unpack there. So I'll start with just this idea of diversity and reliability being interlinked. This is largely to do with the fact that we're a region that is pipeline constrained. There are a few days of the year in which we do not have enough natural gas pipeline to fuel all of our natural gas fired power plants, as well as heat all the homes in New England that are heated by natural gas. So it's very cold winter days in which this is a problem. And as we said at the top, there were two very large pipeline projects that were proposed and were eventually shelved because there was no way to fund them. The markets don't work this way. The natural gas-fired power plants didn't want to buy any pipeline, and the heating customers weren't enough of a demand to fund the power to fund the pipelines. And so most folks that you talk to at this point will say that a huge natural gas pipeline is basically dead in the water in New England unless there's some sort of policy change. And so if we're going to deal with that question of not having enough pipeline, we'll have to get at it through sort of nibbling around the edges, taking smaller bites and perhaps many smaller bites to reduce demand on those peak days. And there was actually a really interesting point. There's this thing called demand response, which is to say if you have a lot of electricity demand on a certain day, you can pay people who have flexible demand to shut down.
Right. So maybe they have a wood stove to stay warm, so they don't need the natural gas.
Right. Or on the electric side,
with solar, who can turn off a line and use their own solar.
Gotcha.
And in the old days, this was largely sawmills who had a bat phone. And when there was high electric demand, the ISO would call them up. They'd answer the phone and they'd shut the sawmill down for the afternoon, send everybody home. And that exists on the electric side. It does not exist on the natural gas side. So could we implement demand response on the natural gas side, have like a million people turn down their radiators by 1 degree and deal with the problem that way?
Smart grid, smart metering,
all
using
of these
those.
21st century.
All of the
buzzwords.
Above. So, Annie, my read of the plan, and obviously you've read it a lot more closely than I have, is that diversity doesn't seem to be there as much. I mean, it talks about it, but it mostly seems focused on natural gas and nuclear. What's your take?
I think that it focuses on diversity in the sense of, again, this quote-unquote all-of-the-above energy strategy, which is the same thing I want to note that we've heard at the federal level. I mean, this mirrors the federal energy policy.
Which President
right
Obama
now.
Said as well.
Sure.
This is a longstanding line.
Right. And so it's the root to all of the above, or sorry, the root to diversity is this all of the above strategy. And, you know, I think it is an open question of whether that's efficient. I think that, you know, another form of this energy policy would be a route to diversity by mandating or subsidizing the forms that we don't have in the mix and achieving diversity that way.
There's a kind of a funny paradox here, right? Because we talk about the all-above energy strategy that we want, but at the same time, we're wringing our hands about our inability to support our natural gas generators, which are, what, about half of our generation capacity in the region. People say we need more pipelines. People see we need to make sure that we continue to have Seabrook Station operating. Seabrook Station is 1,200 megawatts. That is a big nuclear bet.
And nuclear power plants around the region have been in trouble, but this plan seems to foresee that Seabrook is part of the energy mix for a long time.
This plan, as Annie said, is a big shout out to Seabrook. I would say it does tee up a useful and important conversation that we need to have about Seabrook.
It says keep Seabrook alive as long as it's economically possible, I think, as opposed to shutting it down earlier than its lifespan.
What about diversity, Senator Bradley? Again, you're vice chair of the Energy Committee. This has been an issue that the system operator, ISO New England, has talked about for a long time, kind of chiding the region for not diversifying its energy sources.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's vitally important that we protect indigenous resources throughout New England, whether it's Seabrook, whether it's the biomass industry in our state or the hydro industry through New Hampshire and New England. We absolutely need diversity, and the governor's right to talk about how we site facilities here. And, you know, clearly, as somebody who has been around this issue a long time, you know, the public voice in terms of siting has to be there, and you have to take into account environmental and aesthetic values, tourism, all those kind of things. But if the lights go off in 5 or 6 years and we have rolling blackouts, as, you know, Don indicated, the system operator is warning about, and warning about loudly, warning about to the extent that they're proposing subsidies for gas plants in the Boston region. These are not subsidies for renewable energy. These are subsidies for fossil fuels that we already have a lot of subsidies for on a national basis. That ought to show you how important diversity and reliability is.
So you think, Senator Bradley, it's we need to diversify. I think everybody agrees with that, no matter what your view or leanings. But it's been hard for New Hampshire to diversify because local communities have been able to shut down proposal after proposal after proposal. Is that what you're saying there?
Well, I mean, look, the Northern Pass proposal had proponents and it had opponents. And, you know, is there a way that that could have been done and meet the criteria that the public is demanding? I don't know the answer to that, but it's a no. The new pipeline across southwestern New Hampshire, a no.
So certain wind projects.
Wind projects, a no. Some people want to shut down the biomass industry in New Hampshire. There are people that are opposed to the bill that we have that'll be on the floor of the House this week that would enhance the solar industry and the hydro industry through net metering. So, you know, we have to look at this holistically and know that we need to protect indigenous resources of generation, or, you know, price is going to be less of an issue than reliability.
All right. So I can see if anybody wants to jump in. I'm going to have to hold off for a second because we've got to take some more calls and emails. Lots of people jumping into our conversation. That's awesome. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Facebook or Twitter is NHPR Exchange. Join us there. And let's go to Alex in Manchester. Hi, Alex. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I'm just wondering, how can, like, Northern Pass get set up and promoted to give power to New York, Massachusetts, and Connecticut, and for development and of New Hampshire, we don't get 25%. The gas line that was coming up gets shut down. We want to promote our development for the future, but it seems these options keep getting culled.
Say that last word again, please, Alex. We want to promote these options, but these options keep getting, what did you say there?
These options keep getting culled down.
Yeah.
And development for the future could be coming in from Northern Pass if we were to get any of that power, not just the construction jobs.
Well, Alex, I'm glad you called because this has been a complaint as well. And Sam, I'll turn to you first. Businesses in New Hampshire say, you know, the state is turning into, you know, no energy projects ever anywhere, that we've really become the state of no when it comes to energy projects, whether it's hydro or gas or solar or wind or whatever.
It's a really interesting question, and it was funny. I was going through the state energy plan this morning, taking a look at it, and it talks about how the siting process needs to have clear, and defined standards, and depending on who you ask, that's exactly what we've got. If you didn't like Northern Pass, they would say, "Hey, this decision shows that the process works," and if you did like the project, of course, they say this shows that it's broken. For me, what I've been thinking about a lot recently is the model through which utilities go through when they're building these huge projects, which is they sort of decide what they're going to build, they announce it, and then they defend it. I think there are a lot of folks who are reevaluating that entire process and thinking maybe before we decide, we should go to the communities and come up with a project that they might like better. One, perhaps, that is built entirely in right-of-ways on existing poles. As one of our Northern Pass opponents noted earlier in an email, that was a type of power line project that she could get behind.
Well, and you can hear Harvard Business School students using this as a case study for a long time, you know, how to get an energy project through by maybe more of that public buy-in. Don, go ahead.
Absolutely no benefits to New Hampshire customers. Maybe not absolutely, but very, very, very few benefits.
You're talking about Northern Pass
to
now.
New Hampshire customers for Northern Pass. So I don't think you have to have an MBA or a PhD in sociology to figure out that people are not going to be happy about something that doesn't deliver any benefits to them. And basically was a project that would be benefiting and paid for by folks down in Massachusetts. I do think that Eversource and the other supporters of Northern Pass have a point when they argue that it just took too darn long to get to no. Because if it takes that long to get to no, ultimately that is going to have rate impacts because transmission owners jack up their transmission rates based on how risky it is for them to develop their transmission projects. And so the federal regulators give them all kinds of bonus money to compensate them for the risk of getting their projects turned down.
Okay, but now we're not supposed to pick winners and losers anymore, right? It's just sort of every man or woman for himself in terms of these energy projects.
So one thing that the state, that this policy, this new policy says is we want to make the setting process more predictable and make sure that both all sides understand the possible outcomes, kind of how things are proceeding, even if it's not quote unquote agreeable to them. So I just think there's so much in this plan that is a clear, you know, reference to the Northern Pass situation. And, you know, Governor Sununu said that he felt the project had been railroaded after it was first denied. And I think, you know, Don is right that it took a really long time to get to that no and that we're still fighting about that no. And it was sort of abrupt when it finally did happen. So and maybe more public outreach would have helped people like Alex understand how the project was going to affect New Hampshire or not affect New Hampshire positively or negatively.
Senator Bradley, I have to ask you this too. Again, you're a policymaker. You know, everybody wants diversity. There's different feelings about different projects, but how do you let these local communities that host these projects be heard without having, you know, project after project after project rejected? I mean, you know, people don't want nuclear power plants in their own backyards. Or maybe they do, but they want some say, at least, in where they're put.
When we rewrote the siting law, I think it was in 2014, we wanted to have more public participation in the process. More public participation in the process.
So did you go
overboard?
That's
how we do things. No, I don't think we did. But it does slow the process down. There's no question about that. There are now public members on the site evaluation committee. There's a public interest standard so that a project has to show that it is in the public interest. But let me get back, if I could, to the benefits from New Hampshire on some of these big energy projects.
Northern Pass aside.
Okay, don't get into the debate about Northern Pass. But I had a bill last year that would have allowed a larger slice of power from a project like Northern Pass to have gone to Eversource ratepayers. We passed that bill in the Senate, but it sort of foundered in the House because people were concerned about the divestiture process. I get that, but we need something like that. If we're going to host infrastructure projects, there needs to be a way to make sure that New Hampshire benefits from that. So I'd like to hope that the legislature will reconsider a proposal like that next year and move forward with it, because I agree. Large energy projects are controversial, and if you're going to have them, you have to weigh the pros and weigh the cons, and we ought to have a way to make sure that we take advantage of the benefits if we're going to host these energy projects. And look, let's face it, if we want to keep the lights on, we are going to have energy development, not just in New Hampshire, but in New England.
Yeah, I wanted to say it gets back to the issue of our regional grid, right? I mean, you can't cite a big energy development in New England almost without crossing state lines, just because the states are small and they're close together. And a lot of this stuff is coming from Canada or coming from New York or coming from one state and having to go into another. And so, you know, this really is a question for all of the states to grapple with that, you know, sooner or later, another state is going to want to put something in your backyard, as we say, and you're going to have to grapple with how that's going to benefit you, how you're going to reap benefit from it.
Sam, how do other states do it? I mean, you know, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, are they more amenable to energy projects? Do energy projects have such a hard time getting off the ground in those states as we seem to have here in New Hampshire?
I think they have a hard time getting off the ground everywhere.
Okay.
But, you know, it again, though, I think it's instructive the details of the project matter because there was a power line that was fully permitted in Vermont. Very quickly and easily because it was entirely under Lake Champlain, and then it was underground along Route 4. And not only that, but you know, talk about benefits to the community. There was something like $600 million that was going to be given to efforts like cleaning up Lake Champlain. And so, you know, the project did not get chosen by Massachusetts, and that's why it's not going forward.
Because
it was so expensive.
Okay. Here's an email that I really want to share with you. This is long, but it's from Kate Epson, who's executive director for New Hampshire's Sustainable Energy Association. And Kate really wanted to be on the show today. We had invited her, but she absolutely could not. So I just want to put that out there. We'd hope to have Kate on today. So here's a couple of the points that Kate makes. She says, while it is excellent the governor is valuing energy efficiency, the revised strategy doesn't reflect the hundreds of public comments that requested increased, Kate emphasizes, increased deployment of renewable energy. Like Hassan's strategy, this one again misses an opportunity to set concrete goals or metrics so that we can measure progress by way of concrete solutions. We offered a goal to reduce the amount of exported wealth that leaves our state to import foreign resources, specifically to reduce that amount by $1 billion per year in 10 years. This is possible to do via increased biomass, solar, small hydro and wind, as well as through increased efficiency and a reduction in gasoline for vehicle use. So I want to ask everybody about that in just a second, that the public wanted increased renewable energy. But here's another point Kate makes. The strategy is overly focused on electric rates at the expense of understanding full energy costs and benefits. Cost effectiveness, for example, is not defined in the strategy, but is used over 70 times. National data so that residential and commercial electric bills are on average the same or lower as national averages for those bills. We pay bills, not rates. Finally, Kate asks, what about fuel for transportation? We need to take serious measures to move away from the amount of gasoline and individual miles traveled, which can be done with EVs, public transportation, smart planning. So lots and lots of points there. And Senator Bradley, though, the big one that I'm getting from her and that we've gotten from a lot of our emailers is this plan is a missed opportunity that the public said it wanted in terms of increased deployment of renewable energy, as Kate puts it. That seems to be the big hit on this plan, and I wonder what you think. And now I'm looking at the clock, and mea culpa, we have to take a quick break. So that's what we'll dive into after a short break. Is this plan missing the boat when it comes to the energy of the future or not? We're also going to talk to somebody who works with New England Power Generators, Dan Dolan, president of the New England Power Generators Association. So he'll be on the line with us coming up as well. You stay with us as well. A lot more coming up. Stay with us.
At one point, your car felt pretty high-tech.
To the Batmobile.
But now, the radar for the Batscope sticks, and those rear rocket launchers never seem to work in heavy traffic. So riddle me this. When you upgrade, why not donate your old mobile to NHPR? We'll take care of the paperwork, schedule a free pickup, plus you could get yourself a groovy tax break.
Holy guacamole!
Be a hero. Donate your old vehicle to NHPR at nhpr.org/cardonation.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're looking at the governor's updated energy plan for New Hampshire, what it includes, what it doesn't. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With us now for a few minutes is Dan Dolan, president of the New England Power Generators Association, which represents 80% of the installed generation capacity in New England. And Dan, really nice to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So who is among your membership, Dan? What kinds of businesses?
So we have every different type of power generation that exists in New Hampshire and across the six states of New England. So it includes all of the remaining nuclear power plants. We have much of the natural gas, most of the remaining coal and oil, as well as a vast majority of the wind, solar, hydro, biomass, every different fuel and technology source that's out there. And what keeps that diverse group together is a belief in an open, competitive marketplace, where as long as they're following the state and the federal environmental rules and the capital requirements associated with the New England-wide electricity market, they should have an opportunity to compete without any guarantees for rate recovery or profits from the marketplace overall.
Well, it's interesting because as you were talking about all the different members, I thought, wow, I'd love to be in the room when you all get together, because that is a diverse group. How do you feel about this plan that the governor's put forward?
So I appreciate the focus of the governor on looking at costs and trying to drill down there, because I think for so many consumers, and frankly policymakers, there is a mismatch on costs. And I know in an earlier segment you were getting at that with Kate Epson making the point of consumers pay bills, not rates. And yet if we unpack the rate, we are seeing the rate increase, both in New Hampshire and across the region over the last several years. And yet over the last 10 years, the price of the wholesale electricity, which is the cost of electricity produced by a power plant and sold into a central trading hub, has actually dropped more than 50%. In 2016 and 2017 were the two lowest wholesale electricity price years ever in New England. And yet, I think most consumers look at their bill and they look at that bottom line and it's going up. And so what I hope is that coming out of the governor's energy plan, there was a renewed focus trying to drill down into what is actually driving the costs and the rates for consumers.
Why do you think the costs are relatively high? We talked about this earlier, but I'd love your take given your position.
Sure. So at the same time that we've seen the wholesale electricity price drop 50%, we've also seen the wholesale transmission cost that I know Don Kreese had mentioned has gone up 400% over the last 10 years. New England pays twice the cost of transmission of any other marketplace in the entire country. And to a certain degree, I worry that that system is getting gold-plated, that we are overbuilding that transmission system. A lot of those costs are appropriate. We do need to turn over some of the older poles and wires. That is the highway system on which we deliver our product, the megawatts. Nonetheless, there does come a point in which we've gone too far, and I worry we've hit that.
Now, that's interesting. So we pay very high transmission costs. That's the cost of just getting that, you know, that electricity from the power plant, whatever kind it is, to my house. So those are high, you said, but then you're worried that the transmission system itself is gold-plated? It's too good?
That's exactly right. And part of this does have to do with how utilities are paid. In many ways, we're the dog that caught the car. Thanks to the restructuring acts that have been passed across the region, the utilities, the Eversources, the National Grids, the Unitils of the world are out of the business of building, owning, and operating power plants. Instead, now the only place they make money is building and developing transmission lines.
I see what you're saying.
And like any rational investor, that's where they're putting their money.
Well, what's missing from this plan in your mind, Dan?
I think part of it is expressing a frustration of New Hampshire having to deal with the public policies that are being put in place in other states. And yet I think it's inherent within the electricity system that it is an interstate system. And so what I would hope for is taking a leadership position to try and work with the neighboring states in the region on trying to get at how do we create as open and competitive a system as possible that will then allow for some of the resources that I know the governor is interested in trying to support, like nuclear at Seabrook, to be able to compete and compete fairly. Because right now what we are seeing is a number of states, Massachusetts and Connecticut in particular, carving up the marketplace more and more, and that's undermining the economics for facilities that are hosted in places like New Hampshire.
Is there value in Massachusetts and Connecticut's efforts? And I hear you, others have mentioned this as well, that New Hampshire feels sort of pushed by this. But is there value in pursuing those investments, Dan, given what we know about, never mind climate change, you know, the costs of air pollution, public health, costs of floods in terms linked to climate change, public health costs linked to asthma. I mean, there's sort of externalities associated with fossil fuels. So is that worth pursuing?
So you're right. Massachusetts and Connecticut and actually Rhode Island, three states that make up over 80% of the electricity demand across the region, have carbon reduction mandates on the books to deal with the effects of climate change. And my organization, as diverse as we are, actually supports those. And we believe that it's incumbent on us on an economy-wide basis to be able to meet those mandates in those places. What I worry is that those states have chosen probably the most expensive way to try and get there, which is chasing shiny objects, saying we're going to contract with that resource and that resource, and picking winners and losers in the market, rather than saying this is our objective. Here we're going to price that externality, whether that's carbon dioxide, whether that's mercury, sulfur dioxide, nitrous oxide, take any of the pollutants. Let's price it into the market. And then let's step back and let's see what is the cheapest possible way to get there and ensure that we're both serving consumer demand reliably and meeting our environmental mandates and obligations.
Okay. Dan, good to talk to you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That's Dan Dolan, president of the New England Power Generators Association. And Don Kreese, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Well, so what Dan Dolan fails to mention is that we have a thing in New England called the capacity market. His members make millions and millions and millions of dollars every year in payments from ratepayers just for showing up. That is a...
just for the reliability of being, you know, knowing that you can turn the lights on.
Right. And so what that says is that we are not truly dependent on an open and free market in electricity. That doesn't work. So we have this capacity market, and there's all this money flying around that lines the pockets of the members of the New England Generators Association that pays them just for being there.
Well, and Senator Bradley, you know, to you as well, the question I asked Dan about externalities, you know, when we think of costs, we think about per kilowatt hour. But anybody who's taken Econ 101 knows about the externalities associated with fossil-based fuel production, pollution, ozone, smog, you know, leads to asthma. Then there's the meta issue of climate change with all the associated costs that we've seen here in this state, you know, damage caused by larger, more powerful storms, rising tick populations. You know, I could go on and on. How much does this new plan account for those public health and public infrastructure costs associated with continuing to rely on fossil fuels?
The market has already accomplished much of the environmental improvement that has come with closing virtually all of New England's coal plants, the reliance on natural gas as opposed to coal and oil for generation of electricity. I mean, that has happened. That's here to stay. I don't see us going back to, you know, burning coal anytime soon. So natural gas is a bridge to the future, as well as it should be and could be. Renewables, I think, in New England are going to start to fill in the gaps that we need in terms of more generation. But we also need to look at hydro, which is carbon-free or at least carbon-neutral, as part of that from Canada. And the debate about how we get Canadian power here is going to keep on going. But that's certainly an important component, I think, of a smart energy plan. And I think, to me, where I sit right now, protecting New Hampshire's indigenous resources is the top priority. And so,
does that mean biomass?
The biomass, there are 900 jobs in the biomass, and its impact on state funds, timber tax, fuel tax, business enterprise tax, the unemployment situation, top priority, protecting the 50 megawatts of small hydro in New Hampshire, the Wheelabrator facility right here in Concord, that is a higher priority, better use of the environment, according to the Department of Environmental Services, than landfilling. You know, so those things to me are a top priority at this point in time.
Small scale hydro.
Absolutely.
So
yeah,
maybe not
New Hampshire's indigenous resources.
Yeah. So everybody wants to jump in, Annie, and then we should talk about biomass because I've got a tweet about that. Go ahead, Annie.
Yeah, well, and I guess just broadly, I mean, I wonder, Senator Reilly, how you feel that potential subsidies or bailouts for biomass, which are working their way through the legislature right now, square with what the governor's plan says about not picking winners and losers.
And I think the governor is well aware of the positive impact in terms of jobs and fuel diversity that, you know, all of New Hampshire's indigenous resources have. And, you know, it's one thing to talk about subsidies, but let's be honest when we talk about subsidies. There have been subsidies forever.
For everything.
You all have
Nuclear's
computers in front
it,
of
oil's
you.
Gotten
Google.
It. Yeah.
you know, Wikipedia on energy subsidies, whether it's the oil and gas depletion allowance, whether it's favorable leasing for oil and gas development, whether it's R&D for nuclear, whether it's the cost of disposal and storage of nuclear. And I'm not arguing with any of those. But when I, you know, have hearing from people about subsidies for, you know, New Hampshire's indigenous resources, it's like, wait just a minute.
Everything gets
subsidized.
Wait
just a minute. Energy is heavily subsidized
so
in America.
So what would happen if we just blew all those subsidies away? Sam, I'm looking at you. I mean, Senator Bradley's right. People say, boo, I don't want to subsidize, you know, hydro or bio or whatever, but everything is subsidized. So what happens if, as this plan wants to, we just get rid of it all?
Well, and I think this is where there's a real disconnect between this energy strategy and the reality of energy markets. Like, we do have energy markets. There is a modicum of competition, but the idea that energy is operating in an open market is a fantasy because it is heavily, heavily regulated. There are rules that say that the ISO has to keep the lights on. And in order to do that, they craft their rules. They say who can participate in those markets, how they can participate. They create things like the capacity market, which Don was critical of this morning. And so it's nothing like, for instance, the heating fuels market, which is generally, you know, there are limits to competition in the markets for heating fuels. But when it comes to electricity, it is a heavily regulated market. And beyond just subsidies, there are restrictions in, as to who gets to participate. And so say you want to encourage, for instance, battery storage. Right now, it's very hard for someone who's got a battery to participate in those electricity markets. And so if you want to encourage it, the only way to do it is through subsidies.
Tom. As the lawyer in the room, I would say in some respects, this is a huge federalism problem. The states opted to deregulate and restructure their electric industry. Jeb Bradley was the big leader of that in 1996.
I remember doing shows back then on this.
And
yes.
I was back in sixth grade back then. But when we did that, it turns out we ceded a massive amount of state authority to the federal government so that we have lost a huge degree of our control over what resources we rely on in New Hampshire to serve the energy needs of our citizens.
Go ahead, Annie.
I wonder if I wanted to get back to energy efficiency because I wonder if that's one solution to this that the state and that individuals still have control over. And I know that, Don, you think that's a great part of this plan. And
a lot of people like that.
But at the same time, we're also seeing some fits and starts on that in the legislature again. And so, like, just last week, it was the Senate that killed the bill to make the regional greenhouse gas initiatives. Profits in New Hampshire all go toward energy efficiency. So I wonder if there's a way for the state to put its money where its mouth is on efficiency. That's something we've heard from environmental advocates, a concern, but also if that is really a priority, I mean, how do we achieve that?
Right. If energy efficiency is really a priority.
And that's one thing that we can control.
Do we do it through subsidies? Oops, we're not supposed to do that now. So, that's a good point, Annie.
The Senate could fail to pass House Bill 317, in which the legislature claims the right to determine whether there are any increases in the future in the system benefits charge that pays for energy efficiency. That is a bill that is fundamentally hostile to energy efficiency.
Okay, so go ahead, Senator Bradley, real quick, and then I've got a couple emails I want to share.
With that. I think it is very important to have the legislature buy into the cost and the structure and the price of electricity. And I think that the PUC's new energy efficiency resource standard is exempt from, you know, that legislation, Don, as you know. But having legislative review, I think, is appropriate for such a big issue that is in front of us. And, you know, I have to say, in all the talks with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, there's hardly any dissension on the fact that we should be moving to that energy efficiency resource standard.
Okay, Sam, real quick.
I just wanted to fill in some of the context between this back and forth that we just heard between these two, which is in the last energy plan, there was a push to create more funding for energy efficiency in the state. Now there's $176 million going towards energy efficiency. That was not decided on by the legislature. It was the Public Utilities Commission that created it as in a settlement between the utilities and Don's office. And so in response to that, we have this bill that says, hey, the legislature should okay these deals. But it's a great case study of how energy strategies work, right? There's a signal sent by the governor's office, the regulators take it up, and the legislature responds.
Well, bunch of emails and tweets that we didn't get to. I'll share a couple as we close out today. Rick on Twitter, I believe this is Rick LeBrec from Eversource, said, please ask Senator Bradley and Don about a long-term solution to the struggling biomass power industry in New Hampshire. If these assets are critical to New Hampshire's economy but are not profitable, should we consider a regulated cost of service approach? Rick, thank you. I sort of talked about biomass earlier, but I'm thinking that's another show we need to talk about. Here's another email that I did want to share as we talked about the state's policy versus local policy. Josh, who's a city council in Portsmouth, says, while the governor's energy plan prioritizes lowering rates over renewable energy, several New Hampshire municipalities are leading by adopting their own renewable energy policies, like Portsmouth has. Josh says, further, all municipalities can adopt solar, wind, and wood pellet tax incentives under existing New Hampshire law. That's interesting because cities and towns don't have a lot of power in New Hampshire. Concord is also trying to achieve a renewable energy source by, I'm not quite sure, 2050. So cities and towns have their own ideas. This has been great. I have to close it out here. I want to thank everybody very much for coming in. Annie Ropeek, Sam Evans-Brown, Don Kreis, and Senator Jeb Bradley. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.